Blog Talk Radio.
We do it every night.
Every night. I live alone, but I still do it every night.
Right after dinner.
Definitely after meatloaf.
Like clockwork.
Do it. Run your dishwasher with Cascade Platinum and save water. Did you know an Energy Star certified dishwasher uses less than 4 gallons per cycle, while a running sink uses that every 2 minutes? That means even small loads can save water. So why not do it? Run your dishwasher every night with Cascade Platinum, the surprising way to save water.
The Drum Major Instinct.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I, poor little children, will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
Better known as Akubaland, Peace and Blessings America, better known as Turtle Island. Peace and blessings to the world. You're now on the front porch with Sister Bessie the Truther out of Lagos, Nigeria, www.blogtalkradio.com. Dial 516-453-9133. Press 1 to speak to me or my guest. This is the Damon Network. Brought to you by Looking Glass Entertainment. Tonight, my title of my show is an interview with Dr. Walter Palmer, a well-known activist for equality. Let's hear his story and goal that he has planned to fight racism. Let us honor him for his life works. Dr. Palmer?
Hi. Sister Bessie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good. How are you?
All right. Are you feeling well this evening?
I am. I'm feeling very good, and particularly since I was able to connect with you.
Oh, thank you, Brother Walter Palmer. We're going to begin our show so I can introduce you to the audience with the questions that I have. Listeners out there, I would like to get my questions in before you call in for to speak to Dr. Palmer. All right, Dr. Palmer, what is your educational background? You also studied at Temple University and Cheney University. What were your achievements at both of these colleges?
Sister Bessie, what I'd like to do, before I even start there, I'd like to put up front my website, wdpalmerfoundation.org, so that people can follow the trail that of the discussion we're going to have tonight for the next hour and a half or so. W.D. Palmer Foundation, the wdpalmerfoundation.org, and they can see the anti-racism petition we're working on, because I'm going to bring that up, and everything's going to center around that. But a lot of my education, initially my education started when I was hired at the University of Pennsylvania health system, and I was picked for a training program called respiratory therapy. And I studied respiratory therapy for several years, three or four years, at the University of Pennsylvania. And while I was there studying, I had an opportunity to get a position, and that was at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. So after 4 years or more working at the Children's Hospital, working at the University of Pennsylvania and studying respiratory therapy, I was hired as 25 years old. I was hired by the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, the world's oldest children's hospital in the Western Hemisphere. And at 25 years old, I became the director of respiratory therapy, which eventually became cardiopulmonary therapy. I led the fight led the struggle and helped develop the education for having this field be advanced. While I was there as director of cardiopulmonary care at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, the former Surgeon General, Dr. Sievert Koop, who was one of my mentors, along with Dr. Leonard Bachman, who was a Secretary of Health and Welfare for the state of Pennsylvania, he pushed me and wanted me to be an administrator at the Children's Hospital. And because of that, I decided I needed to go get some business courses. So I went to Temple University to study business. And I put a two-year program as a two-year associate science program behind me. And I always wanted to be a teacher, always wanted to be involved in education. So what I did was after my 2 years at Temple, I put 2 years in at Cheney State University, a historical black college in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And I got my bachelor's of science with a major in history and social studies there. And I brought all those skills back to Children's Hospital, where I'd be there for the next 10 years, from 1957 to 1967. I was the first black in the nation to have such a distinction. I was the youngest person, white or black, in the nation at 25 years old to be a director. So that was my education journey. And along the way, I also studied at Temple University radio, television, direction, and production and communications, because I've always been fascinated with communications.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Palmer. I also want to know, what is your stance on white supremacy or racism in America?
Well, I've been a great student from the time I was 19, 20 years old, reading the works of William Burkhart Du Bois, Joel A. Rogers, Booker T. Washington, Marcus Garvey, Paul Robeson. All of these men really inspired me. And I began to understand that America did not invent slavery. Though America introduced slavery into the Americas in the 1600s, when a group of black Africans were taken off of a man of war ship in Virginia in 1619. And these were slaves. So these slaves became incorporated into the new colonies in the United States before the Civil War. So slavery had been around forever. It's historic. It's been around since the beginning of time. But what happened was, in the 1600s, 1700s, what America did in the colonies was created the slave codes. And the slave codes the 1600s and 1700s, what that did is that designated people of color to be slaves. So if you were born born to a black mother, you'd be a slave. So slavery followed the motherhood. So slavery and racism then became synonymous in American society. And that then became the litmus test and the divider in American society, where white people had to justify the taking of African slaves and bring them into the Americas. And so what they did was they created this sense of superiority that they were justified in doing because they were superior, and they were superior because of their color or the absence of color in their skin. And white supremacy is synonymous with racism, slavery and racism. And although it's a false notion, and no one is automatically superior because of the color of their skin or the absence of color in their skin, it has become such a hallmark in American society. It's been the bedrock of American society, and race matters in every aspect of American society historically and has not been purged out of American society. So white racism, white supremacy are all major features which, for the most part, have never really been cleansed out of American society.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Palmer, for your answer. When did you start fighting for equality, Dr. Palmer?
Well, I think I was a teenager. I think that what happened is I grew up and I was born in Atlantic City, New Jersey, a small town in South Jersey. And I grew up in a house with my great-grandmother, who was a former slave, my grandmother and grandfather, my mother, my father, and two other siblings, and my aunt and her two children, all in a little two-story wooden house in Atlantic City. And what I found and observed later on aside from Granny being told the story about Granny being a slave, I saw black people were divided from white people. Black people lived north of Atlantic Avenue towards the bay. White people lived south of Atlantic Avenue towards the ocean. So I experienced racism early on. We were very poor living in those crowded quarters. So I experienced poverty very on. I had seven siblings. I was the second of eight children. We could not live all together. So my mother and father had to separate out the children to live with aunts and great aunts between Philadelphia and New Jersey and Atlantic City. And so I experienced separation and hardship. So poverty, hunger, separation, racism, discrimination were all features in my early life. I left Atlantic City at an age of about seven or so, moved to Philadelphia, lived in a neighborhood referred to as the Black Bottom, the bottom of West Philadelphia inhabited by black people. What I found there was that white people lived south of Market Street, which I lived on Market Street, and black people lived north of Market Street. So all over again, I'm experiencing separation by race, poverty, hunger, et cetera. And me and my dad, my mom, and my two younger brothers lived in two rooms. And from these little two rooms in the back of my stepsister's beauty shop was where I would grow with my siblings. Now, my father wanted so badly to bring all of his children together. And unfortunately, by the time I was 12 years old and still living in those two rooms, Daddy couldn't bring them together. He died. Then I became the man of the house. I became parentified. So I had to be the one to help my mother bring all of our children, the family back together. And I was able to do that before my mother met my stepfather. They would have five more children. One died at birth. And now we had 12 children and two adults living in two rooms at 3645 Market Street in West Philadelphia.
Wow. Oh, that is a great story, Dr. Palmer. And, you know, that shows me that you can overcome a lot of things that happen to us in our lives. And that is a great example for the youth today. I've also learned, Dr. Palmer, that as you was a youth, you were stabbed and shot and you were involved in gangs. Can you elaborate on your experience in that situation that you grew up in?
Yes, I can. Now, what happened when I left Atlantic City, New Jersey, I was just a kid in a small town, no real motivation for being involved and getting in trouble. The worst thing I ever did was to steal an apple and got caught. That's how bad a thief I was at age 5, 6 years old. But I moved into tough terrain in Philadelphia where people had to literally fight from going to elementary school from three blocks away, four blocks away. I had to learn how to fight to protect my brothers and my sisters. My father died when I was 12 years old. I had to learn to fight to protect my mother. So I learned the ways of the street. I learned how to survive. By the time I was 12 years old, my first arrest as a juvenile was burglarizing University of Pennsylvania dormitories. And I'd get locked up every 6 months for disorderly conduct, disruptive behavior, fighting, et cetera. And in fighting to protect my family between ages 12 and 17 years old, I had been stabbed several times. By the time I was 14, before I got to high school, I was shot in a drive-by. And I had to fight inside of prisons to establish territorial rights or supremacy. I admired some of the older guys and men in my neighborhood who protected the community. And I admired them a lot, and I wanted to be like them. So by the time I was 15, 17 years old, I became a warlord in the neighborhood and the protector. And I go on to protect my community from age 16, 17, 18 years old, all the way up to my 30s. I just never surrendered, never gave it up. But what I learned was by the time I was 19 or 20, and I got involved in the Black Power movement, the Afrocentric movement, the Civil Rights movement. Going to jail wasn't a bad thing. It all depended on what you went to jail for. And I went to jail many times after my teen years. I was arrested in high school. I thought I was supposed to be the first generation to graduate from high school, but it looked as if fate was not going to have it. I was arrested for a riot, mayhem, disorderly conduct, assault and battery, and attempted murder. And as God would have it, God's will, I overcame all that, was released out of prison, finished high school, and went on to be mentored and to mentor others and changed the trajectory of my life.
Oh, yes, Dr. Palmer, you really overcame. I just love your will and your strength. Dr. Palmer, can you hold on? We have a track coming up.
Okay.
Well, first of all, before we let Dr. Palmer hear that track, Dr. Palmer, you touched my soul and heart more than any other guest in Only Dying History. My mother grew up at 37th and Brown. She's
wow,
from Mantua.
That's over.
Okay?
Mantua.
The cousin family. The cousin family. You know, shout out to my,
yep,
my uncle, Jeremiah Cousins. You know, my aunt Ruth
okay.
Cousins, who's alive today.
Is Jeremiah a reverend?
No. He was. He worked at Lombard Presbyterian Church. You know, and
okay,
he's Elder Jeremiah Cousins. Shout out to my Aunt Ruth Goodson, who's still alive at 90. Shout out to my Aunt Nettie Crawley, who lived to be 106. And also, most
God
importantly,
bless.
Right, Sister Bessie? Shout out
yes
to my mother, Deborah
God,
and Cody.
God bless them. God bless them all.
And you talked about where you could not go down the street. Lancaster Avenue was the marking point where, you know, white kids
well,
used to chase black kids across the street, going back to the back to the
yep
black bottom. And my family grew up on Mount Vernon, the Cobb Street. You know, you touching
yep
my heart right now, man. I wasn't going to come on Bessie Boone. He started talking about he was from the black bottom, man. He talking about my mama. You talking about my mama, man. You know what I mean? That's my
that's
mama,
wonderful,
man. So, you know, my mother was the first person to graduate college in America in her family. My mother
that's
graduated
wonderful
from the University of California at Los Angeles as a nurse in 1955. My mother was born in 1929. Okay? May she rest in peace. My mother would have been 91 years old. And actually,
that's
I'm
wonderful
wrong. My mother would have been 92 years old this year. And, you know, there's a lot of great, great, great culture in, you know, the bottom of West Philadelphia. And you know what?
It is.
Let's go to the track because we're going to, you know, play Philly Zone. Hal Melvin and the Blue Notes featuring Teddy Pendergrass. Wake up, y'all.
Change up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hell. They don't have so very long before that judgment day. Won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we can do it if we're all in the hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our mind. Sure things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be.
Peace and blessings. I'm back with Dr. Palmer.
Yes, Sister Bessie.
Dr. Palmer, we will continue with our questions. Can you speak
can I say something? Can I say something before we go? Your producer was raised down in the area called the Bottom. Hal Melvin, the singer of that song, was also raised in the black, in the Bottom, not the Black Bottom, across the hill towards Mantua. And I don't know whether he knew that or not.
Yeah, I did. And also, no, I was raised in Compton, California. My mother was raised in West Philadelphia. So my mom and dad met in California. And, you know, on tomorrow, 51 solar returns, they had a baby boy named me. And now back to the program.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Dr. Palmer, can you speak on what you did during the move incident that happened in Philadelphia where a whole block of houses were burned down?
Yeah, my first encounter with the move people took place in the 1960s and the late 1960s. And what had happened, they had moved into the Black Bottom area around 33rd Street in Towton. And they became known as being notoriously for being a nuisance in the neighborhood. They would run dogs, they'd catch stray animals, dogs and cats, and they would run the dogs late at night, 2, 3, or 4 o'clock in the morning. They had bullhorns, loudspeakers built on their buildings at a little, they had two-story buildings at 33rd and Palton Avenue and Pearl Street. And so people would just make constant complaints about the noises. They built a compost in the yard, and you had big rats inside the compost, et cetera. And they were confrontational, an activist group that was Back to Nature who wanted to make their philosophy known. They had a lot of confrontation with police. So between the 1960s, mid-1960s, all the way out to the 70s, they were constantly in confrontations and taking a lot of abuse. I would talk to them and try to get a sense of their mission, but told them that I couldn't join them or support them because I couldn't take the kind of abuse they took. I went off to law school in 1971 to get my Juris Doctorate at age 37, and got it at age 40, 3 years later. I graduated in 1974, and I was commuting to Howard University in Washington, D.C. And when I came back, the move confrontation with police was going on and it got severe. Going fast forward, they eventually had a confrontation that turned into a showing of guns by 1977. And I defended their right to bear arms, et cetera. But nevertheless, it turned into a major confrontation. The police were surrounded the buildings. They made it be a free zone. And they were armed police, armed camp. This went on from 1977 to 1978. And then eventually I had gotten a peace agreement between the police and MOVE to take down the barriers if MOVE would move. Well, what happened is the peace agreement lasted for 90 days. After 90 days, the attorney for the city went after MOVE. They confronted MOVE in August 1978, and it turned into a major confrontation. I went down there to try to resolve it, but the place was surrounded by police. I went inside the houses where they were to try to get them out. They wouldn't leave. And after going in two or three times, I came back out, and it was just an armed camp. MOVE was down in the basement with guns, and the police were surrounding the building with guns, and police it turned into a shootout, and I was almost killed. I was pinned down by gunfire because the last time I came out the building, I heard a shot, what sounded like a shot from over my shoulder. A policeman was killed, and I think the shot from over my shoulder was the one that killed him. I was facing him. He's on the side of the street. They blamed MOVE for it, but MOVE could not have done it. But that led towards a major, major shootout. It led towards them getting life sentences for a crime they didn't commit. They went to jail for over 40 years. And finally, this past year, so most of them were at least released. The ones that didn't die in prison were released. In the meantime, a few years after that, in 85, the founder of MOVE, John Africa, took over the house of his sister, Louise Africa, and turned it into an armed camp. And that led towards another major confrontation. He wasn't in the 78 fight, but he was going to avenge the 1978 fight. And that led to a major shootout and then the dropping of a bomb on the building, which really burned down the entire neighborhood. It was only the second time in American history to have a bomb dropped on an American city. 1920 was dropped on a black community in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then in 1985 was dropped on the MOVE compound in Osage Avenue, Cobbs Creek. And I then acted to try to organize people. I wanted to bring charges of murder against the mayor and all of his administration. I took it to the United Nations. I organized groups all across the country and around the world to really to talk about this excessive use of power, authority, and weaponry in an urban city. And I was asked to, along me and Jesse Jackson and several other people, mentees of mine that I trained, were asked to be the pallbearers of John Africa's ashes and remains. And now I'm in the middle of a fight and was interviewed Wednesday, with lawyers trying to understand what happened to some of the bodies, the remains of MOVE members who died and whose bones were taken by the University of Pennsylvania and not returned to them. And so I'm in the middle of that fight now.
Thank you, Brother Palmer. I mean, that's, oh my goodness, that's a wonderful story. And I remember the MOVE and everything that happened here. And also the dropping of the bomb. There was a group, I can't remember the group, dedicated a song called "You Dropped a Bomb on Me." And I never forgot that, that song. Now, Dr. Palmer, I would like for you to one reason why I brought you on the show was to talk about the petition that you have created against racism in America. Can you please enlighten us on your goals of the petition that you have created?
Absolutely. When I was in the medical field, I joined up with a number of doctors and medical practitioners at the 1960s, and we were saying that there are a number of things that need to be incorporated into the medical community, and that racism was one of those things, that gang warfare, shooting, poverty and hunger, these were things that really should be considered a disparity in terms of health, particularly for people who are poor and people who are black. And so we tried hard to get members of the medical community to challenge the city, state, and federal government to call racism a national pandemic or health crisis. And that I joined that fight, was in that fight for all these many years. Well, I get invited a lot around the country and outside the country to do lectures. And so last September, I was invited by the University of Pennsylvania Medical Department of Medicine to give a lecture at the Penn Medical Grand Rounds. That's a big deal. Their Penn Medical Grand Rounds is the largest and the oldest Grand Rounds in the world. And over 1,500 more doctors, nurses, technicians, it was open to them. At the end of my lecture, I appealed to the Penn medical community to join me and the Palmer Foundation, which I set up in 1955, to join me to petition the United States government, join me and the Palmer Foundation to petition the United States government to declare racism as a national public health crisis, and to get the Congress to create a long-term national dialogue on race and racism in America, to start the process of truth and reconciliation. I put that site up on my website, and that's why I asked people at the beginning of this program to write down my website. I'll ask you again, please write down my website, wdpalmerfoundation.org. wdpalmerfoundation.org. Go to that site, and you'll see anti-racism petition. Hit that link. It'll take you to where you can sign a petition. We called for getting 1 million people, 14 years old and older, from all over the United States and from around the world to help us with this effort. We need 1 million signatures. Now, we started this and off of September, but we didn't launch the petition drive till January. To date, we have over 2,946 people that have signed. I'm hoping that, Sister Betsy, on this program, you're worldwide, you have 8 million or more sick followers. I'm hoping that the people on this program can open up and pour out across this continent and all across Africa and around the world to help us get our main signatures. The interesting thing to note is that 50-some years later, the American Medical Association, who fought us and resisted, now recognize that racism in American society is a national public health crisis. The public
yes.
health doctors have now went on record, racism is a public health crisis. The National Medical Association, Black Doctors, racism is a medical health crisis. Now, it's one thing for a city to say they want to recognize it. Another thing for these associations to recognize it. But we're the only ones asking the United States government to recognize it, because the United States government has the resources and the wherewithal to put money behind it, like they did in Germany. After going to war with Germany, they put billions of dollars in under the Marshall Plan to reconstruct Germany. They did the
yes.
same thing with Japan. They put billions of dollars in after the war in Korea to reconstruct Korea. They put billions of dollars in Vietnam to reconstruct Vietnam, because they recognized it as a public health crisis.
Yes.
And for all the people who are talking about police abuse and talking about micro and macro racialized aggressions, and who are upset with race baiting and race calling, that's small potatoes. all of this needs to be incorporated. Prison systems, the court systems, the police abuse, the poverty, the hunger, the disease, all of these things. When you do it as a national public health crisis, everything and anything associated with race and racism is incorporated. So please go to wdpalmerfoundation.org and sign our petition. And I'd love to go to that petition sometime before we get off the air, Sister Betsy, to see whether or not our listeners have been listening to us.
Okay. Dr. Palmer, thank you for your comment. Can you hold on a minute? We have another music track coming up. And I dedicate it to Ms. Debbie Nichols.
Put your bad self. Take two eyes to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit until we get our share. Things for ourselves. We're tired of beating our head against the wall and working with someone else. Say it loud. Say it loud. Say it loud. Say it loud.
Peace and blessings. You're back with Sister Bessie the Truth. I'd like to dedicate the music that we are playing tonight to Miss Debbie Ngozi. Without her influence, we would not be here today. All right, Brother Palmer?
Yes.
Dr. Palmer?
Yes.
Can you tell us, what would you like to say to the youth today? Because we're experiencing a lot of problems in with the youth today, and the shooting of the youth. They are dying so much in our communities. What would you like to say? Because your life is an example of achievement, even though you went through the things that you've done, went through as a youth. Can you give us any wisdom to our youth?
Yeah, I think that I've worked with youth a lot. I always have, and I probably always will. I set up my first school, Freedom School, at age 18, 19, called the Black People's University of Philadelphia. And I set that up to help train children in the Black community who, for the most part, were not doing well in public school. It wasn't to replace public schools, but it was to augment it. And it was to introduce African history, African slavery, African resistance, and the evils of slavery, et cetera, all the vile things that were done to people of African descent. And I wanted them to learn manners and discipline, accountability and responsibility, cultural behavior. I wanted them to learn basic languages, the alphabet and numerical systems of English, Spanish, French, Swahili, Arabic, Chinese, and Hebrew. And and I did this, I started this in 1955. And then I continued with that all up to 1985. My sister, one of my sisters, who was helping me, she was on welfare, and she worked to keep the school alive. She died, and that really took the wind out of my sails, and I didn't have anybody to replace her. So I continued with the Palmer Foundation, which I still run today, gathering data, putting together curriculum and training materials for leadership in urban and rural parts of America and the world. And so it's always been a case of trying hard to get young people to learn how to self-govern, how to govern themselves. And it starts off with this whole idea of learning to respect yourself and then respect others. So many of our youth, Black and white, in American society and around the world, have very low self-esteem and in many cases no self-esteem. And these are issues, I think, that are related to the struggles that young people face. They face a hostile world. People are on the attack against young people, always have, trying hard to take advantage of young people, pedophilia, all kinds of, dastardly things that happen to children. The rise of child abuse is up since COVID. Drugs are up since COVID. Suicide is up since COVID. And that was bad before COVID, right? And I think that what has to happen is it's not so much talking to the youth as it is talking to the elders. We have to assume responsibility for all the youth in the world. And we, each of us, has to see ourselves as being the mother and the father of all the young people. If you're 13, 14 years old, you should be starting to learn what it takes to be a man to help run the house, or a woman to run the house, and take the responsibility for becoming the parents and becoming the leaders that you want and that you see in other people. So it starts with the adults, not the children, and then being consistent with the children so they're not getting double messages, and being able to protect them until they get old enough to protect themselves. That was the mantra for the Black People's University of Philadelphia, which ran for those from the 1950s to the 80s, 30-some years or more. And then what happened was in 1980s, I started pushing hard. Well, even from the 50s on, I was pushing for homeschooling. And then I started pushing in the 80s for parental school choice, mm-hmm. and charter schools and cyber schools, and home schools, Christian schools, Jewish schools, Muslim schools, every conceivable kind of school take the responsibility on for us, helping to help increase the levels of positive belief system inside of young people to overcome the failings that produce this narcissism, nihilism, mm-hmm. or self-destruction, self-hatred and self-destruction because of low self-esteem. So in the night, by 2000, I was able to get a charter school, in Philadelphia, and between 2000 and 2010, within 10 years, I built one of the largest charter schools in Philadelphia, with a total of 1,300 children, 200 preschoolers, 2 to 5 years old, and 1,100 K to 12 children. And in the school, I borrowed $11 million in 2005 to build a 55,000 square foot, two-story, state-of-the-art school. I commissioned an artist to paint 450 portraits on the walls, hallways, corridors, stairwells of the school so children saw greatness every day they came in. I developed mm-hmm. curriculum which taught children how to use reading, writing, math, and science and technology to overcome social problems. And the curriculum was all about overcoming social problems. So we wrote curriculum on race and hunger and poverty and disease. We wrote curriculum on elder abuse, child abuse, animal abuse, abuse of women, and how to use reading, writing, math, and science to overcome these things. And
oh, thank you.
I've always been with youth, and there is no greater work than for us to save our youth so they can save themselves.
Yes. Oh, thank you for what you have done, Dr. Palmer. We have callers in queue now that would like to speak to you. Caller number one. Peace and blessings.
Peace and abundant divine blessings. How you doing, Mother Sister Bessie?
Hi, Brother Hooney. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. How you doing, special honor guest?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you for asking.
You're very welcome, and thank you so much for being on the front line and being the highest example for our day and time. I just want to add on to the bill when it comes to racism. Racism has been one-sided, especially right here on the shores of America. But first, that song, I'm Black and I'm Proud, definitely, we all, as children of the Hall of Fame producer, DJ Olasky, we dedicate that to his mother, as well as all of us, but especially his mother, Mother Ngozi, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, as far as racism has been one-sided, orchestrated and organized by the white power structure. And what they did is, with racism, there's a title of empowerment that comes with racism, and they know it. And they have used racism to their advantage, and especially to our disadvantage, even when it comes to religious affairs, political system, every system that they have took control of is where racism comes in at. And for people to try to say that, you know, we are racist when we are not. In order to be racist, racism and to be racist give you the power to hold a people back, or the power to miseducate a people, or the power to mistreat a people and keep getting away with it. Now, as far as religious people out there, I constantly use this verse, especially for our children. Stop believing what Hollywood have said, or even what black preachers today who are teaching the scriptures, be it the Bible, the Torah, the Bible, or even El Quran, when it speaks about one of the most important verses and that's Battersheep, Genesis chapter 15, verse 13, verse 14, and part of 15, right? But mainly it speaks about the 400-year bondage of the descendants of Abraham, which no other people on this planet can lay claims to that. So a lot of the mythology, a lot of the things that have been one-sided when it comes to racism, we as a people have to reclaim our heritage. That's the only way we're going to do it. But we cannot do it as long as we keep believing what they have said and what they have said all the way back to leading to our captivity. And they have used that, again, to our disadvantage and to their advantage. That's why they took control over everything. We have to reclaim ourselves. And we're good, real soldiers on the front line like you, Mother Sister Bessie, and so many other people are coming forth to reclaim our heritage. That's exactly what it's about. And I charge the white power structure as well as Europeans worldwide, if you really, really want to make a change, you got to pour in funding that's going to re-educate and re-instill the love for the people that's been in bondage to you for all this time. A lot of y'all don't want to, when I say y'all, I'm talking the white power structure as well as Europeans as a whole, y'all want to negate the responsibility, and on one hand, y'all film everything, all of the atrocities. Y'all keep showing this all throughout your Hollywood movies, from Roots to the, 12 years or 7 years of a slave. Y'all keep reinforcing that. But on the good thing, y'all are not denying the atrocities that y'all did. So stop pretending like this thing didn't happen when it comes to the enslavement of a people. And even the government of the United States of America has acknowledged that with the celebration of making a federal holiday for 400 years. So no longer can you proclaim yourself as being the descendants of Abraham, only we can. And you put that into law. But again, your responsibility, talking about Europeans and white power structure, is very limited. The so-called teachers, preachers, imams, whatever they call themselves, have to come forth and start teaching our people the truth to do that in order for to reclaim ourselves. Because, again, you can only give other people a limited amount of, limited amount of power or empowerment over you. We have to take that power back. Individually, collectively, at the self same time. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Hooney. Can you tell us when your show is and time and coming up?
Yes, ma'am. My next advancement will be July the 29th. It'll be my second advancement for this 1 month, and I'll be speaking about death and answering the question, finally giving answers out there. Is this the end? And, of course, I know it's not, okay? But in order for it to remove the fear of death, we have to do that, because that's another step. Because you got a lot of people that's afraid to live in this world, okay, to live their best life in this world. And also, on the other hand, they're afraid to die. So that will be 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, July 29th. The name of my show is We Will Aware You. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Hooney. A caller two.
I wanted to make a couple of comments regarding the comments he made.
Okay, very well, Dr. Yeah. Palmer.
The thing that you have to remember when it comes to racism or colonialism or classism is that these systems are systems of belief. These are belief systems, and what happens is they're pushed into reality. And what happens is they become the reality of the racist or the classist or the colonist, and it becomes the reality of the people who are being oppressed. But people who are oppressed or believe they're oppressed have to first look at terms of how successful their oppressor was in getting them to buy into the idea, the system, the belief system of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
Black people need to look in terms of how we continue to perpetuate ideas of racism. For instance, one of the comments that he made was that white people are powerful. The majority of white people are not powerful. 1% to 3% of the world's population controls 97% of the wealth. Most of the white people, there's 72% of America is white, 13% is African American, 16% or more is Hispanic or Latina. So what happens is there is this notion of real power, which would come from people who are the elitists, people who have the control of the army, the money, et cetera. That's 1% to 3% of the population. There's 350 million people in the country, only 1% to 3%. So where do we get this idea that the average white person has power over us? They don't. There is an assumption, there's a belief that we have that all white people have power over all black people. Until black people break away from that assumption, that belief will become a reality. The way to overcome racism is not participate in it, not be a victim of it. The way to overcome colonialism is to reject the colonial notion, the colonial idea. So somebody has created these ideas, but they have to have people willing participants to participate in it. And so what you have to do is constantly keep talking about the deprogramming of yourself, because mm-hmm. you're a participant in that process. So I lost my thought, but go ahead. That was basically what I wanted to try to say.
Thank you. You said a mouthful. Thank you so much, Dr. Palmer. We have another caller. Caller number two. Who am I speaking with? You're on with Dr. Palmer and Sister Betsy.
Peace and divine blessings, Sister Betsy and Dr. Palmer. How y'all doing?
Hi,
thank you.
Thank you. So, Dr. Palmer, I would just like to say I'm listening to everything you're saying, and I'm enjoying your show. It sounds good. However, I do want to point out, in order to help the people first, you have to stop identifying yourself as black under the Constitution in America. And I'm going to tell you why. Under the status of black, you're not identified as anything. You don't have any rights. You don't have any equality. You don't have a flag. You don't have a nation. You don't have a post office. You don't have a government. You don't have currency. You don't have land. You don't have sovereignty. You don't have diplomatic immunity. You have no resources. So with that being said, you have to uncondition your mind, because the people don't have knowledge of themselves. So how are you going to fight for racism when, one, race means competition. Two, black and Africa is Greek, first of all. It means to divide and separate, and it comes from the root word, faraqua. So when we're trying to educate our people and we're trying to help them, we have to give them self-knowledge, and we have to self-educate ourselves and self-educate our youth so we can give them something to be able to identify themselves as. Because identifying yourself as black is only going to keep you conditioned under the white man's system.
Thank you for your comment, dear.
Yes. Let me comment on that.
Yes. Thank you.
The idea that you have to have land, the idea that you have to have an army, the idea that you have to have all these material things that she just enumerated, like, is a false notion. The majority of people do not have all those things. And the reality is, if you continue to use the very definitions and the very assumptions that people who have oppressed you use, you're contributing to their oppression. I don't view myself, I don't buy this idea of identity politics. I don't believe in the fact that in my blackness. Blackness in many ways became a reaction to whiteness. The idea of race is a Western notion, Western concept. It was never in the African language, European, Asian languages, et cetera. But what happens is people who are oppressed, and all of us are in one way or another, who have not examined themselves and how they're contributory to their oppression, continue for that oppression. I mean, most people will never have $1 million. They'll never own more than one property. They're never going to have an army. That includes the gangbangers in the hoods. We continue to look at the definition of power by the very people who we claim are not our friends or who are our enemy, right? And I look at my humanity. Even my blackness is nothing more than an interim ethic for something higher. It cannot be told on my tombstone. Here lies a man who was born, fought the good fight, died. He was born black. He fought the good fight for black, died black. He's buried black, right? What about his humanity? What about his soul? I think I'm in search of my soul. I'm not in search of trying to replicate others who have more than I have and others who use what they have in order to try to overpower me or try to control me or control others. Slavery begins and ends in our mind, notwithstanding the fact that we have had chains and we've had lynchings and stabbings and shootings. But a lot of this really is in our minds. I'm free because I choose to be free. I choose to fight to free my mind from these colonial ideas, these racist ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to realize that the oppressor can never be successful unless he has the participation of the oppressed.
Yes.
So just so real quick, just to be clear, what is it exactly that you're doing again?
I'm not going against anything. I'm going in favor of developing my own humanity, being in search of my own humanity.
And can
I don't
I
care
say this?
About people.
Can I say this in defense of Dr. Palmer? If you have listened to the show, if you have listened to the show, he has told everyone how he began and how he's been fighting the majority of his life in the force to fight against inequality amongst the people, especially the indigenous people on this planet. He has stated that. So we have a track coming. Dr. Palmer, would you please stay tuned? We have a track now.
I will. Thank you. And I hope people are signing the petition.
To be free, purposefully.
peace and blessings. Peace and blessings. We are now. Peace and blessings. You're now back with Sister Bessie the Truther and my guest, Dr. Walter Palmer. We now have caller number 3. Peace and blessings to you. And who am I speaking to?
Hi, Sister Bessie. This is Angela calling from Atlanta tonight. I am really enjoying your show tonight. I'm enjoying your special guest. He's amazing. I thank you for just being who you are and allowing your light to shine through our Creator. So I thank you. I tell you that word light was dropped in my spirit on today. And I want to share that really quick. But I thank you for what you're doing. I'm reminded of Psalms 119 and 105. It said, thy word is a lamp unto my feet and thy light unto my path. And that word light was just ringing in my spirit. Mm-hmm. And he broke it down to me, like the L, said, listen to the spirit that's in you. The I, be intentional about the things of God. G, set goals, write the vision, and make it plain. H, hold fast to your faith that you trust and believe. Do not be moved. T, truth will be revealed through your actions. It'll always be revealed through your actions. So I thank you for being that light for those that may be in darkness right now and need to see the light. I tell you, I thank Brother Hooney for all that he do, and he constantly reminds us that we are the chosen one. And if the people go over and they read Genesis 15, you know, I won't back down. And I thank you for doing all that you have done, because you definitely set a way for a lot of us. You set the standard high, and you've given us something to fight for. So I challenge everybody. Find out who you are. Allow that light that's on the inside of you, because we all have a light. We all have a purpose. Jeremiah 29:11 is real. He said he had a plan for us, to prosper us, for us to be in good health, for us to have hope and future. Everybody's so focused on physical things and material things. It's not about those things. Like you say, it's the soul. Mm-hmm. Because this physical body, we got to leave here one day. But with your soul, travel on.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Can you tell us when your show is coming on and the date?
So I'll be on the 28th. I'm on the day before Hooney, the day after Jerry. My show is called Walk and Purpose with Angela, because I want everybody to know they have a purpose, that they didn't just get dropped out of the sky. But they also have to know that nothing is going to drop from the sky to save them.
No.
It's already in them. That power is in them. So position yourself to be an overcomer through being a willing vessel to empower others through your resilience. That's the power, and it's in you. When he say he breathed breath, the breath of life in you, he breathes a part of him in you. It's already in you. It's up to you. It's up to you. So thank you, guys. I so love this show tonight, and I thank you all for what you're doing. Thank you, Brother
Owen,
for allowing us this platform.
Thank you.
Dr. Walter, we are about to close the show by now.
Can I make a comment before we go?
Yes.
First of all, I want to thank Angela. I want to thank you, other people that called in as well, and your producer and you, Sister Bessie. I hope all the people who listen to this show will actually go to wdpalmerfoundation.org and sign that petition. If there are 8 million people out there, we should try to get as many of those millions to sign that petition and send it around the world. Not just in America. Africans were taken off the continent and dispersed all across the world. I wrote a book called Africa's Gift to the World, where 160 countries were the recipients of African slaves between 1400 and 1800. And it's the little things that we do. This petition is a little thing. It's small, but it's powerful. It forces America to have to come to grips with racism, and we know that that is something they do not want. And it stops the nitpicking. It's a small token. Many of us say we can't do this, we can't do this. It doesn't mean anything. We try to make excuses for not being able to do the small things that we can do. And Angela's absolutely right. And I just hope that after today's presentation and my engagement with you, all of you out there, that you will really help us in this effort with a small thing by going to wdpalmerfoundation.org and sign our petition to help us get that million. I'm 87 years old. I'll be 90 years old in 3 years. I've set the time date of 3 years or more to try to get a million signatures. I'm hoping tonight that we will be a long way ahead trying to get that. And I hope Sister Betsy will remind you from time to time on her program to go to that site to get those petitions signed. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Palmer, and thank you for being my guest. And thank you for all that you have done for this community, all the things that you have sacrificed in order to fight for equality, especially for our community. And I want to thank you for what you have done around the world and to go and speak and do the things that you do. I just thank you so much being an elder. And you give us the courage to fight on, and you give the youth courage. I just want to thank you for what you have done today and tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Good night, everyone.
Brother O?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Dr. Palmer for coming on this program tonight. You know, being a soldier in your walk, a sojourner, to try to help people and change people.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Sister Bessie the Truther on her 38th O&E syndicated station all-time connection record. Outstanding international internet radio broadcasting nominee. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, first of
Thank
all, I
want to
also, yes, I want to also say, you know, that this show tonight moved me in a way that I have not been moved by a guest. This man grew up in the same soil as my mom. You know, you understand the black bottom and the things that that is all about. And they're progressive. There are people trying to make a move to go elsewhere. My mom was part of that. My mom not only made a move, that young lady, Sister Bessie, went to Southern California to get a degree in nursing. How about that?
Yes. Yes.
Huh? The first ever person in her lineage on this soil in so-called America to gain a bachelor degree, high school diploma, but a bachelor degree in nursing. My mom, she all that, y'all know what, listen, I started this network on the day that she translated into glory. Stop playing with me. Y'all know the history of O&E Dynasty. Debbie Ngozi, enough said. Also, we have a young lady, Sister Bessie, that is on Tuesday night. Her name is Asetatune Ray, and Essence of Time. She will, you know, be able to expound upon what she believes and what she says and her support on every single show since she's been here. She supported your show, and I love the fact that we have opinions on every show. Not just Will of God, and not just Jarek. You know, we have opinions. And we express those things because talk radio is fantastic. And again, her show is Tuesday night, 9:30 Eastern Daylight on these O&E stations. Tomorrow night on these O&E stations, we come back on with a young lady that loves our coach. Sister Bessie loves Derek Gibson and Huddle Sports Nation. Right, Sister Bessie? You know, that's your boy, right? That's your boy.
Yes.
All right. Huddle Sports Nation, 9:30 Eastern. Daylight time on these O&E stations, of course. Damon Network has advertising to O&E, which is Ola Belly Ngozi Enterprise, which is, of course, at www.lookingglassentertainment.wordpress.com. as well as in Go See Primetime on that, Damon.com. We're in Go See Time both for Twitter and Instagram. Ola Deli and Go See at Pinterest and Google Plus. Ola Deli and Malibu and Go See at Facebook, as well as our business page, The Front Porch. Don't you know where to sit down and get some tea? Get Sister Bessie's tea. Also, guys, this young lady sells tea. Get with her on Instagram. It might save your life. Get with her. Quick. And I mean, any comments, suggestions, or wonderful program tonight? Ole De Lay, down in Goes with Mind, gmail.com, and I am. The International Internet Radio Hall of Fame, producing this Ronnie for the class of 2021. Ole Deli, Malay, Ngozi, and most important, you're my grandfather's favorite. Saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in Armed Force Radio that support us on a constant basis tonight. Sister Bessie the Truther. You have 2 minutes left to go in the program.
Thank you, listeners, for your support. And thank Dr. Palmer for being my guest. I have talked about a lot of things in the past 3 years, government, depopulation, biological weapons, black trauma, black inventions, vaccines, genocide. So I challenge you to go back and listen to some of the shows that I have done in the past. And I send my love, peace, and blessings to the world and all who support me and support our elders. Thank you so much for tuning in. Peace and blessings.
The Drum Major Instinct.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Blind, poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. We'll be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last.